keeping with the phosphorus theme, our next speaker, Vimala Nair, will be about land application of biochar and phosphorus retention.
Thank you. Good morning. Today we are going to look at land application of biochar and phosphorus retention. It's not actually land application, the theory behind that, which is unfortunately an inconvenient truth. There are lots of things that go with it that we do not understand so far. Let me introduce my co-authors first. They include Andres Afretas, a graduate student working with me, and she's right here in the audience, and Willie Harris, who's a soil mineralogist and a colleague with whom I've worked for several years. Now, the whole thing started when we saw all the things in literature which says for plant uptake and for agronomic purposes, we have different types which says some it was successful, some said there were no effect on adding biochar, and the third said it was actually a negative effect. Then we have a whole lot of environmental problems with biochar additions from different sources, different soil types, and so on. Now, to try and get some ideas of this, we looked at multiple ways of looking at the same situation. And this, to begin with, we looked at peer release at environmentally relevant P concentrations, that is, the lower P concentrations. Before I move on much further, funding for these sources were from several different sources, including graduate student assistantships, residual funds, USDA hedge funds, and several of the local funding agencies. Now, this particular graph here is P solution on the y-axis, and P added into the soil biochar mixtures. Here it's a hardwood biochar with 1%, 2%, and 5% biochar additions. Then what we see now is it's the soil rather than biochar properties that dictate environmentally sound P loading rates. If you look at the graph itself, you will see irrespective of how much of biochar is added, the inflection point is the same. If we add an extra or we have another high P retentive soil, then this simply moves further on the x-axis and the inflection point just changes. This is a published paper in Geoderma by Dari and others. He was presenting a couple of just before. Then we looked at control temperature of biochar preparation. The same biochar was prepared at three different temperatures, 350, 500, and 700 degrees Celsius. So here again, we have the same results. For a given soil type, the point of inflection is the same, but differences occur after that. Then, following this, we looked at P sorption at high P concentrations. So far, it was at low P concentrations. And at high P concentrations, with increase in addition of biochar, the top one is hardwood biochar, it actually increases with increase in biochar percentages. So the S max, for example, increases. The top one is a hardwood biochar, a plant-based biochar, and the bottom one is an animal-based biochar, which is a poultry litter biochar. And so we know that biochar enhanced P sorption at elevated solution concentrations. But the point is this P reversible? There are several which have shown that P can be released by desorption processes. So what we did is we first of all looked at some of the biochar properties and Malic-3 extractable and total properties. This doesn't work. So if you look at the poultry litter and the biosolids that are both from the animal-based biochar, the total P and the malic 3P are much higher. And also, you have a very high concentration of calcium in the poultry litter. And then, if you look at the potassium, we have a high concentration of potassium in the poultry litter too. These are not the same for biosolids. And of course, in the hardwood or in the wood-based or the plant-based material, the total P content is much lower. With the interest in biosolids that go on at this stage, we looked at the biosolids feedstock to see how the differences, how it differs from the biosolids which were created, the biochar that was created from this particular one. Higher malic 3P, and we'll look at it a little bit more detail soon. An experiment was set up, which is pretty simple, but very time consuming. 1% weight by weight biochar from biosolids, poultry litter, hardwood, and maple were mixed at 1% with a soil. There were 3 replications and extractions with continuous or repeated extractions with a 0.01 molar KCl solution. What did we see? What we did see was that initially, the first few, that's right here, this is the biosolids, this is the poultry litter biochar. They were high in the beginning, and then they leveled off. But if you look at the hardwood and maple biochars, there was absolutely very little P that was released. All right? And that goes right with what we have seen, that they didn't contain a lot of P to begin with. So next, we looked at the elemental spectra of the biochar. In the poultry litter biochar, you will see the P peaks, the potassium peaks, the calcium peaks, and the magnesium peaks. Compared with the biosolids biochar, much higher P, which we have seen earlier, calcium again, it had some little bit of iron that's different. And we looked at the hardwood biochar. They're all the same scale. And what did we notice? Almost no P and no calcium. It's similar to what we saw in the original. And finally, we looked at the maple biochar. Here again, it's much less than in the animal-based biochars. We then looked at SEM patterns of the biochars. The poultry litter biochar did show a calcium P association, but this association was not found in the biosolids biochar. It did not detect any calcium or magnesium P forms in the biosolids biochar. But when we looked at the original biosolids, it did show a magnesium P association. And we'll come to more details on that in a little while. And of course, as expected, the hardwood and the maple biochars do not show any calcium magnesium P associations. Next, we looked at the X-ray diffraction patterns of the biochars. The top one, the one that I'm showing right now, is the poultry litter biochar. And we saw that there was all it had was Whitlockite. We identified one P form, P calcium form, which is a beta tricalcium phosphate. Now, this is a slow-releasing P form that might be just the same as what you have seen in the earlier graphs when it attained a constant value. So that is the pattern for poultry litter biochar. Now, the biosolids biochar did not show any such peaks, all right? But the biosolids itself showed struvite, which is a magnesium ammonium phosphate. So during the preparation of biochar from the biosolids, during the heating process, we lost the struvite somewhat. Then we come to the plant-based, nothing to indicate. No calcium P, no magnesium P associations. They all fall in line with what we have seen before. So, in summary, we see huge differences in P release patterns and composition among biochars. Although P retention increases with biochar application for a given biochar, the retention can be reversible. Animal-based biochars do not behave in a similar manner when in contact with water. The poultry litter biochar behaves as a slow P-release fertilizer due to the presence of whitlockite, which releases P, which is a mineral that releases P slowly. We could not detect any mineral P form in biosols biochar by SEM-EDS, but SEM-EDS revealed magnesium P particles. The feedstock, the biosolids, showed the presence of struvite. Now let me take you over to the previous presentation here. This cannot be taken as the final word, because biosolids processed from different locations will behave very differently. We have seen that in some of our earlier rainfall simulation experiments, and many other experiments by others working in Florida have shown some similar results, that they are very different. Plant-based biochars do not show any calcium or magnesium P associations. So all this bring us to some questions on the land application of biochar. What would be the ideal rate of a given biochar application for a given soil type for maximizing agronomic returns while minimizing environmental risks? That is a very big question, and we now see all the problems and all the differences that we have seen in the various biochars. Second, would repeated biochar addition during each cropping season cause and exacerbate negative effects in the long run? That seems very likely, because it may just act as manure sources, something very similar to manure, releasing P continuously. So if you keep uploading with more and more of the biochar from an animal source, the chances are it will eventually lose that one and environmentally unfriendly. Actually, I'm involved in a project in Europe where they have been adding biosolids for years, and the same thing happens. The negativity keeps increasing. So that's another thing that we should really take into consideration during the biochar land application of biochar. So how can we manage repeated biochar application based on properties of the biochar, the mass, the volume, and the soil on which the biochar is applied? We have seen in literature, biochar applications, not 1 or 2 or 3%, but not even 5%, but 20%, 30%. How are we going to handle those things? You may have to add 30% or even 50% of some biochars to get some effect from a plant-based source, but possibly even less than a 1% from an animal-based source. And remember, we have a huge line that goes down, which shows that the release is far greater till the soil is able to hold on. There's a minimum capacity for the soil to hold on to the phosphorus. So that is a major problem that we have to find a solution to. Now, the question, of course, the next thing we are trying to work on, could biochar be designed to provide more desirable properties could mixing biochars. The feedstocks help with compost. And what I've not added here is the fearful question of we don't know what happens in commercial biochars. We get all sorts of biochars now promoted, and anybody can buy commercially available biochars without knowing what the concentration or what that particular biochar is holding on to. Its agronomy probably will work well because they have been, you know, modified for agronomic purposes. But how is it going to affect us environmentally? With this, I'll probably stop here, but at the same time, we are thinking of adding a field component to a recently awarded USDA NEFA award to see how this one particular biochar in a couple of soil types and what we can see, you know, just to understand the theory which we have, how it's applicable to actual land application situations. And with that, thank you, and I'll take any questions.